Hey there, I want to talk really quickly about the invaluable, unauthorized sexual healing tour content. I want to put that into perspective in, you know, the total story of the Enduring Gifts of Marvin Gaye podcast, right? Let's just kind of finish that story a bit. So Marvin was in Austin, right, and was creating Midnight Love there. And really the thing that was like the 911 reason that Marvin Gaye came back to the United States was that at the end of 1982, his mom had to get kind of emergency operated on for a situation to do with her kidneys. And that was the thing. That got Marvin on the plane to come back to the United States. Kind of obviously in line with other things, because I'm thinking that I just read that was probably in about like November of 1982 that he was heading back here. It was either like late October. I think like that's when it might have been, like, call it Halloween, that his mom was going into the hospital for surgery. And I think, like, he leaves Austin that night so that, like, into November 1st, he's in the air and then he's landing in L.A. By that time, if it's that far into 82, well, we know that Midnight Love has actually been released, because it gets released in September of 82. And it's either the whole album or just Sexual Healing, the single. Anyway, I also got some statistics on that like the album was a certified double platinum kind of upon release and like boom, 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 you know, it's selling like that. And that the single Sexual Healing is also certified platinum. So the album double platinum, the single platinum. Right, then Marvin is just back here. So he's here for a little while. Well, and it is just a little while, because if we're thinking this is November of 82 that he gets back, and he's just kind of avoiding the pressure that accordingly it's been almost like 2 years. That doesn't make sense though. That they'd been asking him to tour. Of course, unfortunately, I'm getting this bullshit from Ritz. Before I go any further with what I'm spouting to you, let me explain that process. What prompted me to start researching the internet today was just wanting details, succinct, clearly, quickly, on the dates of Marvin Gaye's tour, that last tour that he did, covering Sexual Healing, right? That project. And I can't find it anywhere, anywhere, anywhere. Finally, I'm in a Wikipedia result, I think specifically on the song Sexual Healing, and there is one sentence in it, like a page, you know, scroll down a page long result on the song. And there was literally a sentence that said Marvin Gaye like kicked off his Sexual Healing tour in April of 1983. The end. You know, and I was like, wait a minute. I wanted to know how many cities did he hit? You know, like what were the venues that he performed? I wanted those details. I could not find it anywhere. And so I'm trying to think. When I got that sentence, there was a little hyperlink, clicked on that, it took you down to their bibliography, and that reference showed you that it was coming from an Ebony magazine article from July of 1985, and I just sighed such a sigh of relief. I'm like, okay, yay. Ebony covered it, as they should, right? Like, that is exactly where I'm going to appreciate to go read the details about this. So thank goodness I was able to click a link and it takes me to a PDF of the whole entire, pictures included,
Don't you know they had an ad for my Canadian Mist in the middle of this article? But unfortunately, upon getting to the pages in the Ebony magazine where this article begins, and I feel like it was just titled like The Last Days of Marvin Gaye. So it's talking, I probably, one second. Okay. I'm like bothered by this. Okay. So get to the article in the Ebony magazine, and right away at the top, it says it's written by David Ritz. Then you're going to go down to the bottom of that first page, and it says, this article is an abridged excerpt from his book. And in 85, I don't even know if he had released that book yet, or if it was, he had just released it or whatever, right? So basically, they're just giving you some bullshit from the last chapters of his fucking book. That being the case, for me to get into that article, because I had a sentence referenced from it about the tour, you know, if it was written by David Ritz, that it is required to contain more of bullshit and psychological, just short of using the medical terminology, diagnosis, because somehow this man practices unauthorized psychology, right? So it's just, then, you know, you're gonna commit to why you're looking for something. I'm reading 4 or 5 pages of this bullshit to just finally get to a little fucking page that has like 2 columns of information about the tour. Okay, that's what I wanted. But that's perfectly a connection to the overall experience, the overall mental experience. 9 times out of 10, I'm thinking you are here with me, that kind of traumatizes you should you consider approaching any of the content out there that is available from this sexual healing tour, right? And you know what? 9 out of 10 portions of that trauma, so 90% of the trauma that you are pre-spoon-fed, as you would want to approach that content, is coming from David Ritz. Because like I said, I spent all day today, literally, I'm Googling and Googling, just Googling the fuck out of trying to find some details about this tour of Marvin's. Like, did somebody write a fucking article about it? You know, I'm just not finding the references. So that finally, I find one sentence in one Wikipedia article that links me to an Ebony magazine article that is just shit from his fucking book. And it's probably like a 6-page article. So it's not until like page 4 of it that you get to like 2 paragraphs about this fucking tour. It's teemed too much of negativity. It's teemed too much of David Ritz's little jumbled mind. Like, I don't want to understand his mind. You know what I'm saying? Like, that being the case, you don't want to read content from somebody whose mind you just don't want to have to fuck with. You know what I'm saying? It's like, if I don't want to fuck with your mind, like, there, are you giving me Oscar? So I don't want to, like, need to be exposed to you. And so then I don't want to read your words full, because that's exposure to your mind. You know what I mean? And that's exposure to, like, what the fuck goes on in your mind. I don't want that. I don't want to be exposed to you. But, you know, so it's like when this fool picks up the pen on Marvin, it is with an intention to fuck you up like that. Okay, dude. So this last little portion of Marvin's life, it's like he's going to town on that MO of how he writes about Marvin, right? So that, I, do you not feel bad? Do you come across some content of Marvin Gaye from the sexual healing tour? Why do you got all that pre-built in trauma? Where's that coming from? What have you already been told about all of the state of Marvin's life that's just unraveling and falling apart, and all of this psychological, just short of the medical terminology diagnosis of what he was going through, right? Like, just to press play, enjoy listening to the music, right? So, yeah, that's there for a reason already. It came from one source. And you know, it gets corroborated. And of course, it's not that it's not true, but Marvin beautifully himself spoke to you and I on this topic about his life. Okay, I will not put up again that Flying High in the Friendly Sky episode. Something creepy as fuck went on with that. Like, I don't know who the audience was that all of a sudden out of nowhere, like, glommed onto that episode and just made it skyrocket. It's like, that's not what that episode wasn't for that people. So I don't, it was weird. It got weird. So I took it down. I'm not putting it back up, but let's just that episode and that song from Marvin Gaye more than a decade prior to this point in his life is knowledge that you and I should already feel comfortable with having straight from Marvin Gaye on this topic. So what's the topic? The topic is observing the shape that Marvin is in that time frame. Okay. On YouTube, I'm coming across one source of information that is the holy grail of video content of Marvin on this tour. There's this one dude, I don't know how to pronounce his name or whatever, but basically Google the internet for like Marvin Gaye Live 1983 and then filter it down to video results and then look for stuff that's on YouTube. 9 out of 10 of those results are coming from one person's YouTube channel. He's got the holy grail, like I said, of this video content. So yes, I mean, if you need to feel bad for Marvin, you can go ahead and watch that content with that pre-fed, pre-trauma in your body, in your mind, pre-knowledge of just all of this psychological, short of medical terminology that you can use to apply to it, right? Information that's been kind of piled up on you. That has to be incorporated before we're pressing play on the music in our ear or that we're able to listen to and see, right? So, or here's what I have just been needing to do lately. It's like, therefore, me fan number one. Yes, that's been my experience for the past 28 years. I'm not going to say for some reason, for this reason, right? For this reason. Any of that content from that era, the 1983 live concerts era, I don't want to hear it because of this like associated trauma that I feel like I have to listen to that music with. Like I just have to feel so devastated about what's going on with Marvin at that point in time. But now let me finish my thought. Let me step this back to Marvin Gaye singing Flying High in the Friendly Sky. I was just thinking of this. I kind of woke up on this thought today. It was like, you know, it's because I don't know if I haven't told on the podcast platform here, but I'd recently did, like, it's like within the past month and a half or so, like 7 videos. Just quickly, I was trying to do like a little radio format, and I tried to combine the first 7 songs of the podcast into one video, where I'm just going to give a little commentary, introduce the song, let the song play, go into, you know, so it'd be like if you had just tuned into a Marvin Gaye only radio station, and I'm going to just come on and give you a quick little backstory on the song, let the song play. And of course, YouTube blocked that. These motherfuckers, they haven't blocked me in a long time, but I tried to put up that video and they blocked it. I was like, fuck them. I know each and every one of those songs is allowed, so I had to split it out into individual videos. So now I have 7 videos up on the channel of doing that. Introducing the song, coming into the content. And I just stopped shy of Flying High in the Friendly Sky. But the last song that I did was the Marvin and Tammy episode from the podcast. And so they've just been on my mind. How he was one person when she was alive and another person after she passed away. And that honestly, it occurred to me this morning to think, would we have this? I'm asking this question. You asked. Answer me. You tell me. Would we have gotten what's going on if Tammy Terrell had not passed away exactly when she did. Because flying high in the friendly sky is kind of how Marvin's been dealing and coping. Okay. And so there is no part of that song that is Marvin Gaye singing that is about an outside of himself fictional character, which is this urban myth, legend, pre-built in essay anywhere you read liner notes on what's going on. By a white writer, too. Just said that, yeah. About what's going on is about, right? It's what is, read your liner notes, what's it about? A returned soldier from the Vietnam War. And is specifically in Flying High in the Friendly Sky. Okay, now that character is starting to dabble with drugs. And it's somehow... we know it's about heroin. I don't know how we got that knowledge. Like, I don't know why we know that. And I don't know why we know that it's about this soldier return. It's just like, what the... where the fuck is that from? Who told you that? You know what I'm saying? Because, hi, but that's not what the song is about, okay? It's not who the song is about. It's not what the song is about. Marvin Gaye is singing his autobiography in that song. I love my video on the YouTube channel for this song. It is slow motion video of me flying high in the friendly sky in Maui. I went and did a zipline package. And so you go to this, that you like hike in between. And then they take you on the little four wheeler all terrain vehicle to get to some other spots as well. And so then this video that I have of myself ziplining is the longest one that we did, is the final one and the longest one. And I slowed it down and it's just perfectly timed to flying high in the friendly sky. And so that's like the perfect visual, right? Like literally flying high in the sky. And when I listened to that song on that video, somehow the lyrics just come through clearer to me, that they're registering to me a little bit more. Like, I'm so paying attention to them. And there's just a line in the song where Marvin says, "Help me, somebody." And that's not some fictional soldier returning from the Vietnam War. It's Marvin Gaye singing his soul and asking for help. Okay? So... yeah, people, by the, we know, okay? So that by the time that we have footage of him from 1983 on this tour, we know David Ritz, yeah, we know, we get it. We know, and we know it in a more empathetic way. And also, in any of this footage that I'm seeing from this dude on YouTube that has the holy grail of videos from that tour, you just see him and he's exhausted. And he just is like physically, mentally exhausted. But I want to, this is like the third recording of this content I'm doing, but here's where I wanted to connect this in. Marvin kind of quickly is back in this shape that we see him in on the tour. Okay. But bless his heart. And you know, what's the dude's name? Larkin Arnold. What kind of a name? Larkin. That's a name. Okay. Homeboy, like, you were named to be named Larkin. But anyway, Larkin Arnold says it in any, you know, documentary that you see of him talking about Marvin. And he just says, like, "I've often wondered if we wouldn't still have Marvin today, if we would have just left him alone over in Austin." And so, you know, fuck Jan Gay. And I just said that too, how she really felt the need in her little fucked up biography with David Ritz to really shatter the image that we all were resting so much easier with, that he really was doing better over in Austin, right? Like, she's got to let us know, oh, he wasn't doing better over in Austin. not completely, you know, like he wasn't just totally only better over in Austin. Like, okay, Jan, you know, great. Wait all your life to say anything, and then you just need to make sure you tell us that too. It's like, I just don't, you know what I mean? It's just like sometimes what we can say, what we can choose to say or choose not to say, okay? So no matter what though, Jan Gay, when he was over in Austin, he's in better shape. You can just see it. Last night I'm watching again the footage of him. It's, I feel like it was from this dude's channel. He had a pullout of Marvin rehearsing that same rehearsal footage where I'm telling you he's laying down on the couch singing I Want You, Don't Try That. Same day, same room, later or before, they're rehearsing I Heard It Through the Grapevine. And I was watching that. I had never paid attention to that one. So I'm listening to that and he looks great. He looks great. Okay, he looks, you can just see someone's countenance, right? And then my same dude's channel on YouTube, he's got like probably 6 or 7 clips of Marvin in concert, 1983. And just under his under eyes, you know? And so he's just not in okay shape. And we know why. And we know why. And we don't have to belabor that, right? So it's like, let's just do that, people. Like, let's approach this content and let's don't belabor what we know is going on, okay? Let's know that we know. Let's know that Marvin Gaye told us his truth about that side of his life and that it ebbed and flowed. And sometimes it was better and sometimes it was worse. And when we're seeing him there, it's the worst. So, okay, you know, that's a part of the experience of consuming that content. But I love Marvin Gaye so much. You know what I'm saying? And what I've just been understanding is that like there's a lot of content, relatively speaking, out there of this phase of time with him. And definitely it's easier for me to consume it in just my ear. I don't need to see my love like that, you know? And so also when I'm not being distracted by what I see and I just would want to comfort and take care, right? It's allowing me to hear that thing, okay? And the level of it, the skill of it, the perfection of it, right? And yes, so some two other things are going on as far as sound quality with it. And this is something interesting that I just found out today. Again, one single sentence. And this was also in a little hyperlink. It was in a Wikipedia article. It was a hyperlink. I was curious about that because I don't think that it really referenced to me like why I was going to click it. But I did. I was like, what is this? And I clicked it, took me down to the bibliography, and it just had all of the information right there. It said, excuse me, that it was referencing from Frankie Gaye's book, My Brother Marvin. That actually, I think that book gets released after Frankie passed away. He passes away at the end, I feel like the last day of 2001, and December 30th of 2001. And the book, I believe, gets released in 2003. Anyway, it said that it was released after his death, which I don't, you know, he wasn't planning on that, I don't think. But here was the explanation about the sound quality. So on that tour, Marvin didn't authorize any recordings of it, okay? So this content that we do have of it is coming to us bootleg. This is the definition of bootleg, okay? This is the definition of going into the movie theater with their smartphones, right? And then going to try and sell it to you for $5 at the barbershop, right? That is what this content is. So, and why it's extra, just the most of worst, is because it's from 1983. Okay, so it's the quality of bootlegging machinery that's available at the time. It is so hilarious, literally right now in my hand. Just last night, I came across my little college handheld tape recorder that just
ejected my tape. I have a little teeny as hell tape in here, a little actual cassette tape. Plop it in. Okay, it's set. Click it down and then just hit record as I'm speaking to somebody, right? This is what those concerts that we can consume were recorded on. This is the technology. This is the sophistication. Okay. This is going to sound like shit. So Marvin didn't work with Columbia Records or CBS Records, whoever it was, because it's morphed into so many things, or even at the same time, it was called one of three things, right? But he didn't say to them, like he said to Motown a couple of times, you know, yeah, let's go ahead and record me in this concert tonight and then release it as an album so that the sound quality is going to be impeccable on this, right? Like, we're going to be using the right type of equipment to capture the sound. I'm going to do the sound check, going to have the levels right, you know what I mean? And then we're going to release this for everybody beyond just the people in this venue this night to be able to experience my show. No. Okay, he didn't, that wasn't a part of what his record label and him agreed to put out. So people that were in the audience places on this tour were using their own devices and equipment and janky to record the show. And literally, watch this on YouTube, my dude's results. One of his videos literally is from some that has brought in his own camcorder. But at that point in time, a camcorder was so big, that shit, you had to like prop it up on your shoulder. It was like the size of the cameras that the local news crews have to use. It was like somebody had that camera that they brought with them into the venue to where literally in the top right corner, it has the date on it. And it actually isn't the date, but there's some white analog numbers in the right corner of the video. So, I mean, like, people were just doing what they had to do to capture Marvin in these concert performances, that they did what they needed to do to record it. And when you think about it, that being the case, that is what makes this content so invaluable. Because, people, this is what I just, as fan number one, am on a journey of myself right now, but I want to encourage you in. I'm coming across too much of this content. I think I said this a few minutes back. That is Marvin Gaye. Okay, that is the baddest motherfucker that there ever is live in concert. Okay, does the sound quality absolutely suck? Yes. But now I understand why. Don't at all associate that with Marvin's approval, Marvin's sign-off. I was, you know, looking at one of these videos and, you know, just looking through some of the comments on the YouTube channel. And somebody said, rightfully so, they're like, you know, I bet Marvin would be turning over in his grave at this content being like sold in these discs, right? Because you can, there's so many discs, these just random as fuck discs available out here of these live shows that sound like shit. He wouldn't have okayed the sale of this shit. It's invaluable because we get to have this content, but it's not at the quality that Marvin would have signed off on for us to have access to this content of him. So, you know, just don't listen to this questioning. Like, it almost seems to fit. It almost corresponds to this already pre-built-in drama for many of the backstory from David Ritz that you've been given about this situation and just the deterioration of it and just the oh of it, right? Down to, let me point out, really, some of what Marvin's mindset is on this, but you're already going to know this too. You've seen any documentary, film documentary, talking about this time, or you've read any of Ritz's content. what was Marvin struggling with, in addition to other things that we know about on this tour? Paranoia, right? This, and that is it. It's just simply that term. It's just called paranoia. And then we're supposed to dismiss it just because of that, right? Just paranoia. So what does that equate to? It means nothing. It means nothing is really going on. It means everything is in Marvin's head. And why and because we know, right? But I have actually, just through reading David Ritz's own bullshit and derogatory way that he likes to speak about Marvin, and in the course of doing the research for the podcast, I never pointed this out, but I came across this little real-time, exact same format. It's in a PDF. It's showing me all of the pages within the Jet magazine issue. It had to have been from 1983. They were talking to Marvin when he was on this tour. And he's giving an interview about all of this death threat concern that he has for his safety and his life being out on this tour. And turns out one of his personnel, his people working for him on this tour, gets killed on the tour. It was a suspicious, labeled as a suicide, but didn't really seem to fit that this, it felt like it was a young dude on his payroll, ended up being found dead in his hotel room, and it just got labeled as a suicide, but seemed really, really suspicious as to, really, that that's what happened. So that contributes to Marvin's fear about, you know, death being around him and death threats being directed to him. So in David Ritz's little article in Ebony from 1985, he speaks about this. Of course, he's doing it in his way, where he's going to tell you one thing and then he's going to totally take it away. He's going to tell you Marvin's point of view about something and then he's going to totally take it away. He's going to dismiss it. He's going to make it sound psychologically, right? He's going to just going to tell you that without using the psychological diagnosis terminology, because he doesn't fucking know that type of shit, because he's not a psychologist yet. He's reading Marvin as if he is all the time. So he points out several death threats were received, and Marvin seemed to take the note seriously, yet. Okay, so now here's Ritz. You know, this was nothing more than the, you know, average superstar would receive going out on tour. And I'm sorry, like, that shit right there is like, David Ritz, shut the fuck up. Because this is equating to me about, like, more in the now, where you hear about these major celebrities that are having to pursue, do what they have to do to go and get their restraining orders enforced on crazy motherfuckers that they may be finding in their house at a certain point in time, or that also send them notes and the like, expressing their, you know, malicious intents. Oh, but like a Taylor Swift isn't supposed to go get her restraining order because she's a superstar and this is nothing out of the ordinary that a superstar of her caliber should expect, that she's going to have some stalkers. It's like, Ritz, shut the fuck up. Okay? So nobody is telling us that Marvin Gaye didn't receive death threats on this. They are telling us that he did receive death threats on this tour. Oh, okay, but all they tell us is that he was paranoid, so that there is no foundation to that. There is no credibility to it, right? And it's like, stop. And like I said, when I came across this interview of Jet Magazine connecting with Marvin during this time frame, he explains how somebody died on his tour. And it just really shook him up, and it didn't seem to be a straightforward story the way that it was just quickly dismissed as, oh, it was a suicide. It's like, it didn't come across like that was a suicide, you know what I mean? But it just wasn't looked into any further. It was dismissed, right? And so in Ritz's article too, he explains that when Marvin got to Boston on his tour, he hired the attorney F. Lee Bailey. Now, I've heard that name before, and I've even seen his face before, like, to see his face, he's very recognizable. I can't remember, like, what other high-profile stuff he's associated with. But he was, like, a huge lawyer at that time and really high-profile, really, really famous lawyer. Marvin hires him once the tour hits Boston. I don't know if that's where he was practicing out of or whatever. But he's hiring him, this attorney, to do an investigation into why, you know, all of this weird stuff is going on around Marvin on this tour. And then I guess specifically, Marvin feels that he got poisoned. Now, who was a good friend of Marvin is Dick Gregory. But we got to understand kind of the influence that Dick Gregory was in Marvin's life. Is Marvin in bad shape at that point in time? Yeah. Was maybe Marvin in bad shape even a little bit prior to this, when Dick Gregory would have been close to him, more in the late 70s when Marvin's here in the United States? And who we know Dick Gregory to be as a presence in Marvin's life is stability, right? Stable. And definitely not a coddler. He ain't going to coddle Marvin. He's not a yes man to Marvin. So if Marvin is just paranoid, Dick Gregory is not going to feed into that with Marvin. He's not going to coddle Marvin. He's not going to go along and just make Marvin feel better and like, okay, Marvin, yeah, I'll go along with your story and I'll coddle you. So no, that's not who Dick Gregory would be as a presence in Marvin's life. But accordingly, Marvin, somebody tries to poison him. And he says that Dick Gregory, if it wasn't for the concoction that Dick Gregory is able to come up with to like counteract this poison that Marvin ingested, that he would have been dead. And so he hired Effley Bailey to look into it. Now, could it be only paranoia? Yes, and if it is only paranoia, then it's really far-fetched and out there into the ethers of paranoia. But I'm sorry, like, I've always heard it was just paranoia, dismiss it. It's only for the reason that we know would cause major paranoia. But I'm sorry, then you don't need to tell me about the fact that Marvin actually does receive several death threats while he's out on this tour. Nobody really ever bothered to point out that little Jet magazine article where Marvin is letting it be known that somebody on his tour actually died. And that nobody really seems to believe that it was suicide. And then accordingly, I guess he got somebody tried to poison him too. Oh, but he's just paranoid. You know, it's like, if he's just paranoid, you guys got to take away the death threats. You got to take away an actual death. And you can't be trying to tell me that Dick Gregory would have just gone along with coming up with some concoction to counteract poison if Marvin hadn't actually been poisoned. Dick Gregory isn't doing that for Marvin. He's not going to coddle Marvin like, okay, Marvin, you think you got poisoned, but you didn't, so here's my little fake elixir. Like, Dick Gregory's not doing that. Dick Gregory's not that person. And he wouldn't have done that to Marvin, for Marvin. That's not his role in Marvin's life. So, you know what I mean? It's like, there was just a lot around this time frame going on for Marvin. So he came back at the end of 82 because of his mom. Like, that is seriously the thing that gets him here. Because if we have to think about that, like I said, we know, you go to my very first episode of the podcast, Sexual Healing, either the single or the whole entire Midnight Love album, is released in September, like a week after my sister was born, right? So September 30th. And Marvin Gaye is still not back here in the United States just because of that. It takes more than like a month later, and it's because his mom is in the hospital that he finally brings his ass back here to the United States. And then, so, okay, let's say he gets here November 1st. We got the month of November, December, January, February, March. That's 5 months. Then I believe they said it was like April 13th or something, or April 10th of 1983, that his tour, the Sexual Healing Tour, launched in San Diego, okay? Then they, this is Ritz, you know, this is the only place I'm finding this detail. But it launches in San Diego in 1983. It ends August 14th in Los Angeles, 1983. So it's a four-month tour. It hits like Oklahoma and Missouri, I heard it say. Why do I feel like it said Nebraska? But I know that can't be right. Like, does Nebraska even have a stadium of any kind? So I know it's not Nebraska. Like, how wrong, but I don't know why in the fuck Nebraska would be on my mind unless I saw that. You know what I mean? But I know that I saw Oklahoma. I'm giddy. I have this article saved. So let me, because Nebraska just seems like really egregiously not what it would be. Let me go ahead and scroll through the pages here of this article in the Ebony from 1985. Where, like I was saying, I'm like, I know, I do not see this big ass bottle of Canadian Mist. But that, let me just say this really quick. That makes me feel better about the fact that I grew up starting out my drinking journey on Canadian Mist, because it's like, oh, I was their intended demographic. These people did heavy ad spend in Ebony magazine, okay? Canadian Mist is like seeking the Ebony magazine demographic. So, oh, no, it was Nebraska. Okay. I was like, why am I telling you guys about Nebraska that Marvin Gaye performed in on this little tour? Okay, so the first phase of the tour is in Missouri, Oklahoma, Nebraska, and Ohio. Okay, I remembered that. I wasn't making that up, but I'm like, why am I telling you Nebraska? Because I know that just doesn't sound right, but it that's where he went on this tour in 1983. And it says that he did 8 consecutive sold out shows at Radio City Music Hall. Let's see. While he was there, the head of Columbia Records, so that's what it, it's Columbia, it's CBS, whatever, the head of Columbia Records, while he was in New York there, threw a huge party for him at Studio 54. On the night that, it was May 16th of 1983. So that was the night that Motown 25 special was airing on TV. They had a big party for Marvin at Studio 54 that night. And then, you know, he's there. So he does 8 sold out shows at Radio City Music Hall. You hear Sheila E. reference specifically that location as a part of the tour. If she has any of her little horror stories to relate about trying to be a musician performing with Marvin, we know. And it's like, bitch, and what's your point? Like, was your shit together? Did you have your part together? You need to play it. I don't want to hear about it. And just to speak on that too, it's like, that's one of the things that is blowing me away about any of this really instrumental content that I can come across from this time. Yeah, heavy keyboard usage, okay? But that is totally representative of the time. Casio is being represented on the tour. You know what I'm saying? It's just like some real heavy, just keyboard, fake instrument sounding stuff, but in no way, shape, or form indicating that he did not have like a 40-piece orchestra with him. And that's what we heard from Sheila E. giving her little commentary about how she added the extra note in the rehearsal on her conga when they were rehearsing What's Going On. Marvin is standing in front of the band with his back to them, looking out at the stage. They're playing. Sheila E. and among like 40 to 50 other musicians adds an extra note to What's Going On, and Marvin screams, stop, turns around and says, who just played a fucking extra note, dude? Like, on my perfection, we don't do that. We're not going to have that. We're not doing that. And then she has to try and play it off and say, oh, I'm so sorry, Mr. Gay. My brother will never do that again. Right? And so just that shows up prevalently in any of these performances that you can find. It seems that in regular portions of his show, he takes an air quotes break, says that he's going to do like a costume change or whatever. And he steps off stage for a few minutes and leaves it to her and her brothers to do a little percussion demonstration, right? So they're just going at their little percussion skills, having a little solo time. So, but I've specifically heard her reference those Radio City performances. And I feel like she was really saying that as far as them, the musicians, they were really tight. But she's just given her little commentary about Marvin, right? So, what else do I want to say about this?
Just that, you know, I want to consume more of this content now. You know, I am finding it. It's really weird the way that it's packaged. It's kind of hard to definitely hone in on the accurate location of where this concert you're listening to was being performed. I do see one kind of a double disc that's out there, and it's saying like a portion of the performances are in this one venue and then the rest are in another city. But the stuff that they're labeling some of the shows as being performed in Miami, Florida, in 1981. And those are actually performances that are coming from Marvin's 1981 show in Austin, Belgium, because that's where Marvin Gaye was in 1981. He wasn't here in the United States. And fuck for sure, he didn't fly over and do a show in Miami. So it's poorly packaged, poor sound quality content. It's bootlegged. You can just order it at these random locations online. Sometimes it'll be telling you that it's out of print. It seems like it's coming from a lot of European places. It's weird content, but it'll be like Greatest Hits Live or Distant Lover Live. And you're like, what? And so you click on that and you're like, oh, this is all of the content that I've heard packaged other places. If it is slightly different, and maybe it's just like a song is different here or there, I don't know. But look, this is what I also want to just think on to explain why I really want to approach this content and just go for it, like studying it. Because number one, being fan number one and 28 years into this game, like I purposefully have avoided this content. A big part of it is that sound quality barrier. It's not a pleasant listening experience. But when we can have that sigh of relief of knowing that this is not something that Marvin signed off on because his whole entire life and mindset and mentality and ability to make good business decisions has deteriorated, and he would have signed off on a fucked up quality sounding project of his like this being presented for consumption and you know, commercialization. No, Marvin would not have sold sound quality like this to you and me. Okay, like this is not what he signed off on. These are bootleg people in the audience with their little very 1983 Technology Limited devices recording these performances. Okay, and that is what makes them so invaluable, because if it were not for them being, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I actually want to give thanks and props to these people, because it's like, oh, y'all are fans for real, okay? Y'all went up in there and did what the fuck you had to do, and then you shared the wealth. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not something that you're just hoarding and keeping to yourself. You're sharing the wealth. So it allows me to even have hesitation to approaching and letting myself listen to it because of all of the built-in, pre-built-in, you know, emotional trauma that has to surround allowing myself to hear Marvin in this time frame. Get the fuck over that. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't all day, every single day of his life at that point in time that he was in that shambles shape. It said one of the other little, you know, call outs of where this tour is happening, he gets checked in to a hospital in Florida for exhaustion while on this tour. And then that results in him missing performances in Tennessee, like nearby Tennessee, right? Like next stops on the tour. But also, according to Jan, you know, I feel like it is during this time frame, he checked himself into rehab too, people. So you know what I'm saying? It's like, this wasn't lost on Marvin. You know, where he was in the shape that he was in is not lost on him. And this was something that I heard somebody point out in the comments on some of these videos, is that, you know, in the closing, he's got a little, it's like called closing, right? You know, he would do that, speak to the audience, letting them know he's leaving the stage. And, you know, he says he's only human, but he loves the Lord, you know, and, but he's, I love that. He's like, I'm only human. He knew the shape that he was in. And I think like, even presence of his mind, he knew the shape that he was kind of exposing us to seeing him in, right? Because I very much think, was Marvin Gaye not on tour and presenting himself to us, we didn't necessarily have to have such concern for the shape that he was in, because we would, just wouldn't have fucking been seeing it as much, right? And he's not letting that be an elephant in the room, right? Like, I feel that he's saying, you know, he's probably going to try and start getting back into doing more spiritual content and this type of thing. So it's just, it's a dichotomy, right? Like, it's just the two sides of a coin. And I feel like that's somebody's journey through substance abuse. You got your moments when you're fully kind of aware of yourself, and then you got your moments when you're indulging. So what I'm understanding, though, through the content that I am coming across from this time, is that that is not the predominance of your listening experience to Marvin in this, okay? I've not yet come across anything, any performance of his that I'm listening to, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, like, as far as like, that side of things, you know, that's not preoccupying my mind, okay? What is, and also part of the sound quality of many of these performances, is the wear and tear on Marvin's voice, but that's his instrument, okay? And that is the reality. And we've already seen Marvin in that shape before. I've told you that. It's like, you can see him on that Midnight Special video from 1974 when they've caught him somewhere later in this across the country tour that he did in the 1974 year, where he's selling out 40,000 seat stadiums, huge audiences, right? And just performance after performance after performance. And that beautiful thing was not made to be used like that, damn it. You know what I'm saying? And so I have absolutely no aversion to hearing my baby's voice strained like that and thinking that, oh no, you know, what's happened to Marvin's voice? It's, well, because Marvin's voice is not meant for that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm sorry. Like, that thing is not to be overworked like that. And that's what happens when he would go out on a tour where it's just continuous 40 minutes, dude, is a lot to strain your voice in performing. I'm sure that it's a longer show than that. And then night after night after night, and in your in-between travel from one location to the next, as it is on a tour, that recuperation time is not adequate, okay? Period. And we know what Marvin was doing in his, what should have been his recuperation time, okay? So, yes, that contributes to any of the automatic feels that you can find yourself feeling watching him in these performances. You can see my poor baby's under eyes, you know, like he just, he's exhausted and you can see that. So yes, I do believe that that makes sense that he checked into a hospital in Florida for exhaustion. He was abusing himself, you know, and as it was, period, let alone combining that with the tour. So, but like I said, I believe it may have been like right before or after this time frame that John said that he checked himself into rehab. So, you know, it's not, this wasn't totally lost on Marvin where he was. And I just, like, what I want to speak to you again is, fuck, dude, like, right before this, he was so much healthier than this Jan Gay in Austin, okay? If you can't let us just have it that he was healthy over there, we know he was healthier over there. So, you know, and it is, that is something that's a heart pull on you, because it's like, fuck, it's, yeah, it didn't take long. And unfortunately, right? Like, but that's what Rick James told you that the drug is. So doesn't take long. I am going to be able to set that aside. I just want to like kind of, you can check out my YouTube channel. A while back, it was probably one of the first of these performances that I came across where it was just like, whoa, wait a minute. I've never heard that song before. I've never heard Marvin perform that song live before this tour. What does this sound like? You know, so I click on the video and then I'm like, oh, and I can watch him. This is a prime example of what I'm talking about. It's the pull. It's the duality of it. He looks so bad. He does. He's tired. He's worn out. And I think like why it extra breaks our heart is like aside from the bullshit of David Ritz and his fucked up commentary on Marvin Gaye, period. Let him pick up the pen or be interviewed, right? We know that he just didn't have a time to come out on the top side of this again. You know what I'm saying? Because I think that fortunately for us for so long throughout Marvin's life, if he's already telling us about this reality of the struggle of a part of his life, in 71, people, we saw him so many times just have these major triumphs in life. And really, when you think about, he did have a major triumph kind of coinciding with him being on this tour. That's exactly the reason why he's on this tour, is because of the major triumph that he has recently had. Is just what we know is that he didn't have 5 years after this tour, and we saw him in such better shape at a point in time in that period, you know. We lost him just pretty much like after this. So that's what makes it, I feel like that's your heart pull. But I don't want to approach that content as only that sadness and only that trauma level, because like I said, I'm just being exposed to too many of the nuances of what Marvin can do with that thing. His voice is strained, but I am loving, there's so many times that I'm hearing him lean into that, right? It's like the voice is gritty and grainy and strained and hurts. But Marvin Gaye has a whole entire thing called Marvin Gaye growl. And there's moments in his song where he may kind of sing it out and it comes out gritty like that. And that's not the moment in his song where it was supposed to sound like that. But he just kind of switches up his delivery of the song and leans into just full on giving us Marvin Gaye growl. How that must have actually hurt his voice, but he is like still delivering us the song. You know, no matter how many performances may have been missed, I don't think that it was the majority of them, right? When he was showing up, he was showing up and he was performing. He was giving great performances. His band is tight. On October 3rd, I made for the song of the day this little quote unquote instrumental. They labeled it as like the opening of the show, and it's Come Live With Me, Angel, and Feel All My Love Inside. But the way that that band is so tight performing that, it's like, yes, like he had an amazing set of musicians partnering with him. He had his whole catalog available to choose from, and he was picking out songs that, yes, it is the only time that you've heard Marvin Gaye perform that song live. And it's like, oh. And that is what, there are too many experiences to listening to this music, this content, this invaluable, bootlegged, unauthorized content where all I can do is go, oh, you know, and when Marvin makes me do that at this late into the game, I gotta go ahead and just accept and appreciate and embrace the content. And I'm not gonna let these other kind of pre-fed, pre-spoon-fed, pre-shoved down my throat notions from some asshole that I know his game, I know his MO, I know his place that he's coming from, kind of dictate that I need to feel a way about the music or just kind of only feel a sadness that prevents me from embracing it. So this thing is about to stop recording, but I just want to kind of give you a heads up. I'm going to be presenting this content as much as I can on the YouTube channel. I'm going to just come up with its own little playlist and let's just really explore this content better. Appreciating what we hear of that thing from the baddest motherfucker that there ever is. Still really, despite all of his obstacles and challenges of life, really still being at the top of his game. All right. Love you guys. Bye-bye.